Welcome to the Secret to My Success Show. Our guests will inspire, educate, and motivate our listeners who own a business or dream about being a business owner. Today's guests will share their stories and the secrets to their success. They have valuable insight with what they went through to start and grow their business. They will share the good, the bad, and the ugly. I promise it will be fun and valuable. Later in the show, former Major League Baseball player Luis Alcaraz will be here talking to former celebrities and athletes about their transition from fame to being hands-on business owners. My name is Alan Bornstein.
And I'm George Cruz. I'm kind of like the sidekick, but I'm better looking, younger, and funnier than Alan. Anyways, Alan and I will be with you throughout today's show getting insightful information. We believe you can learn from the successes and failures of today's guests. Each has unique and insightful experiences. This is the MBA program for those that graduated from the School of Hard Work and want to excel as business owners.
Good morning. This is Alan, Secret to My Success. Thanks for being with us on this lovely Saturday morning. We actually have Mike McGann.
Hey!
Sorry,
McGann.
I opened with a cough, I guess.
But
I swung coffee down the wrong tube, Alan. I'm human.
Right.
No, this is really something because, you know, I introduced you guys earlier in the day, and I typically do a few things around the radio station while this show is airing, but I met this young lady in the alleged green room that we have.
And I think it's so awesome that you're hitting on our guests in the green room.
I think it's awesome that you're calling me young.
Right, there you go. We were having a really interesting conversation.
Hitting on the guests in the green room.
It's a full service experience.
I hit on no one. Okay. Why is everyone laughing?
Hold on, Don. Can you confirm that he's actually full of crap right now?
I saw nothing. It's the lobby right there in front of everybody.
But we were having a fun conversation. She was so interesting. And then I found out what she did, and I realized I'm not sure if I should be enjoying this conversation this way because she might be taking mental notes for a future publication.
You should be scared to death.
You are the next subject.
That is actually why I don't usually tell people what I do, Mike.
All press is good press.
Okay.
Maybe not really. Please don't take that to heart.
So enough of Mike.
Okay.
Dawn, thank you for being with us.
I'm here. Good morning. I'm
happy
to be here.
Yes. And with us, we have this incredible guest. We have Larita Jarvis from the Larita Jarvis Company.
That's correct.
What a coincidence.
It's actually Larita Jarvis & Co. So something people don't usually know is it doesn't stand for company in my mind. It stands for contagious compassion. It's sort of the thing that I don't sell, but I'm actually doing in the world, right? Because who would buy that? Nobody would buy that.
Contagious compassion?
It's a little secret.
Don't
it's a commodity.
It.
So, yes.
A contagious commodity.
I'm hoping it is. I've started using that a little less over the last couple of years. So maybe it's
gotta watch
even more
the branding
of a secret
there, Larita.
Now. You know, I did intentionally pair those words. I love to reclaim words and really get us to think differently about it's so easy to be on autopilot all the time. So I'm grateful that you have me here.
We are so glad to have you. And I want to tell the story that I was actually through a training session and Larita was actually one of our coaches. And we went through this whole exercise, and the exercise was write down how you want everybody to perceive you. And then they asked everybody in the room to tell everybody else how they perceived you.
That's fun.
And I've got to tell you, it opened my eyes because I was absolutely given the wrong message.
Well, there's quite a disconnect that happens with that. There's a strong disconnect between our self-perception and the reality. And I'm very interested in bringing those things together, if possible.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad that you are. I think most of us are.
Me too.
Okay.
I'm in.
Yeah, the branding that I use actually is called Check Your Blind Spot. Because I think for most of us, what we think, we're looking through the lens of our own perception. And then, of course, our own experiences. So trying to figure out what other people are actually receiving is not the easiest thing. And especially for small business owners, I think we usually have some kind of passion. There's a reason that we're doing what we're doing. And what's fascinating to me is that we bring our approach, our lens, and then we start managing people if our business grows. And what's wild to me that I found out is that if we're using our style to lead and manage other people, it's not just that sometimes it misses the mark because those people aren't us and they don't necessarily perceive things like us. It's actually demotivating. We're actually squandering the talent that we have because we assume that people see the world like us. And how else would we know, right? That's why we all have blind spots. And that's why it takes a village, so to speak.
So I'm going to share this exercise that she did with me. It was like, how do you want to be perceived? And it was, I own a payroll company, and I want people to perceive that we're really good at all the things that we do, the taxes, the functionality of running your payroll. And everybody in the room says, yeah, he's funny. He makes me laugh. He's joking around. He's kidding around. And it brought me back to a client way back when who said, I didn't realize how good you were until you made a $12,000 bill from the IRS disappear.
Right.
And we did. She had a $12,000 bill. Her tax attorney told her to pay it. Her CPA told her to pay it. And we said, no, we're going to call up and find out if we can make it go away. And she brought that back to me, which was, because I compete with all these, you know, beautiful girls that are, and gentlemen that are GQ from these companies. So I figured, that's not me. I have a face for radio. That's why we're here doing a radio show. That I was actually going to just be funny. And if you make another thing, I'm going to hit you. No. So
I wish you could see the nonverbal communication that's happening in the studio right now.
So she opened my eyes, which was that, yeah, it's fun to be funny and creative, but at the end of the day, I need people to rely on us. They need to understand that my staff is going to get it done for them. So it was an unbelievable lesson that she taught me, and I couldn't thank her enough. So that's why you're here today, because I think there's so much that you can offer to small, medium-sized businesses that are either hitting the plateau and they're not going any farther, or they just fell off the cliff.
Right. Well, thank you for sharing that story with me. That actually takes me back. And sometimes I do have to slow myself down and remember, like, just meet people where they're at. And that's really why everything I do is customized. It's everybody's in a different place. Where are you at now? What are the behaviors that you're seeing, either from yourself or your team? And then where do you really want to go? And that's why everything I have is built around, like, the driving analogies. In addition, I just think driving is a great analogy in general for how you're going about life, right? How you do one thing is how you do everything. And yeah, because your competence, you've always been competent. And yet it took this client that experience to realize it, which is funny, right? It was a current client. Maybe they came to you because they were having fun and having a good time. And that's why the agility is such an important thing for us. Like, there's no one thing that's going to work all of the time. So it is important for us to know our strengths. It's also really important for us to know what are we underusing. We all have these parts of our personality, of our styles of interaction. That's why we can hang out with so many different people. And yet in business, we tend to really use our strengths to the point that we tend to overuse them and underuse these other parts of our personality. So many people, like, fun, that is an underused skill in business for sure. Yeah, I mean, that's where we tap into our creativity. That's where we can get our authentic reactions of, like, our likes and dislikes. Those are important things to have in business. And the old ways of doing business just don't suit us anymore. What was that term you used when we were chatting, Mike?
Something. I used like 70.
He used a lot, right?
He used a lot of words.
Dinner, date, what else?
It was like this
new... Yeah, that's four. Keep going.
Right? This new way of life.
How
it's
did
just
I put
so
it?
Different.
I forget, but anyway.
Should have written it down.
We'll look up with something. We'll coin a new one.
Okay.
But no, you're right. The landscape has changed in every possible way for all of us over the last year. And in particular now, I think we're closer together and more far apart at the same time.
Right? Yeah. There's as a behavioral scientist, there's a lot of things that fascinate me about this. And for me, I didn't come into this profession as an expert. I think, like most people who go into fields like this, I was just such a train wreck. My communication missed almost all of the time.
That's,
and
I'm
I just
not
had
laughing.
No...
That's, yeah. Well, I listen to a lot of the personal development and, like, growth stuff, and you find a lot of, and I actually had that exact thought not too long ago. You feel like personally, I feel like such a train wreck sometimes, and people who have gotten into it have said the same thing, like they had to dive into this and do it because that the place where they were at.
Right. To quote Tyra Banks, at some point we just have to own our flossomeness.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is that stuff that makes us unique.
Oh my God, a good portmanteau.
What? I love portmanteaus. Are you kidding me?
I think we could have her for a whole a whole episode.
We could.
Well, we could.
In fact, we might just continue.
We'll I'm kind of nervous for my job.
So am I today.
So let me ask you a question.
Don't.
You spent a very short amount of time with Mike here.
Oh, my God. Really?
Okay, so oh, are we going to get? Let's give an analogy.
Okay. Okay, so who you throw down the gauntlet.
Let's just hear it. Mike needs to hear it.
Okay, so
let's
Mike
remember
started
I
by
run
saying,
this radio station.
Right. And that's
good
boss,
reminder
right?
to have. So, you know, you started by saying, like, that is something my friends used to tell me all the time. We'd be hanging out. They're like, and what do you do? And I'd start to describe it to them. I'm like, hey, well, all the time our communication is basically advertising how we want to be treated. Right? Constantly we're getting advertisements. And that's what I do. I tell people how to teach people how to listen to those, and then how to get authentically more adaptive in the way that they respond. So it's not manipulative, so to speak. It's just tapping into those parts of our personality that are maybe underdeveloped. Like if you went to the gym and you only like, you know, did upper body, you know, start doing some squats maybe once in a while. And a lot of people kind of refer to me as that personal trainer for your communication, right? Mm. It is something we can all do. We all have that natural agility. We just sometimes having somebody around to kind of boost our motivation. But then they would say, oh, I'm going to stop talking to you. Are you analyzing me right now? First of all, I have a glass of wine in my hand.
And I so am now.
Right? So two truthful answers. You're not paying
me,
so
no.
Hold
on, let me turn off the microphone.
Right? Second of all, of course, we're all doing it all the time. We just don't realize it. Mm-hmm. So that's how we gain the conscious competence. But that's, you know, when you called yourself a professional goofball, right? You're very aware of your brand, of your strengths, of why people come to you to lead events, to host, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Make you bring smile people. And have fun and just, yeah.
I think you're an exceptional professional goofball.
Well, thank you. I mean, they always said, find what you're good at and do it. And I did the alcoholism for a while and I was amazing at it.
I'm
but after a while, it came time for that to end and grace the professional goofballhood.
Yeah, next chapter. And I think this, like the change that we're all going through, I think there are a couple of different ways to approach it. We can all either just try to cling to what we knew and what used to work, or we can come together and what's the next chapter? Right. What are we going to do that's different?
So I need a transition because the theme of our show is business owners, small business owners, growing business owners. Larita, you have got some amazing skills and talents. I've witnessed them firsthand being in your training sessions. So let's get back to fundamental 101 basics. What is it that you think that you could offer to help folks that are in business about to jump from being employed? Because that's scary. Mm. You think about that. You're going from a paycheck, insurance,
I've been there.
Security, and you're taking
a couple
the
of
leap.
Times.
Yeah, we all have, whether we liked it or not, right?
Right.
Tell me, what do you think that you could provide for advice or guidance for those people?
Well, I would love to answer that question two different ways. Here's what I did for me. I wrote myself a note this last time that I was about to take the leap. And I wrote myself a little note and I wrote a date on it. And it was, you know, fundamentally kind of, why am I doing it? What's driving me? And I was sitting at a desk collecting the paycheck, but really unhappy, knew that I was selling myself and everyone else short. I believe that we all come in with gifts and talents and that's why we're here, right? So when we're dissatisfied, when we're not feeling like we're doing what we're meant to do in the world, it's worth it to take that risk because, you know, money, you can always make more money. But time, once you spend it, it's done. We all have a limited amount of time. We don't know how much we get. So spend it wisely and remember why you're doing it. Keep connecting with your why. Surround yourself with really supportive people. You know, for me, I've had the unhappy experience of having people around me who's like, why don't you get a job? I'm like, what do you mean? Right, yeah. I don't have a job, right? It's soul crushing.
You only have a job when you're like going and punching the clock for somebody else.
My brother, who's a pharmacist, I call him the highest paid retail clerk in the entire store, did the same thing. Go get a job. Yeah. I'm like, really? So I could be as miserable as you?
Right? And that, I think, is the important thing to keep keep in mind, the compassion piece, is that people are coming from a place that's relevant for them, right? It's not really about us. You know, other people telling us we're doing it wrong, or that, you know, maybe we should be doing something different. It may make perfect sense from their perspective if we share their lens.
Right.
But the thing is, we're not them. And even people with the best of intentions giving us all of this advice, my grandpa told me something that I love. He's like, you know, advice is usually worth what you pay for it. And there's so many people out there willing to give advice, but yet, does it fit us?
Right.
The problem is, we were all raised with, well, a lot of us were raised with this idea of the golden rule, right? Of treat other people how you want to be treated. But we have something unique to share, right? So own our uniqueness, and it's okay that other people's way of doing things doesn't fit us.
But right.
Taking right. that leap from having that secure paycheck to being just out there, like, leap and the net will appear sometimes. Sometimes the fell on my face.
And a lot of times that's how we learn, right? I mean, the experience and the lessons we learn when we do fall on our faces, and it's priceless.
That's science, and right? Figuring out what doesn't work is a super valuable lesson. I think it's worth celebrating our failures, because as entrepreneurs, as business owners, we can just fail forward faster. That's the game. Mm-hmm. It's not about getting it perfect or doing it right all the time.
I had an old boss when I was actually working for a company, and he decided later on in life to go back on his own. And he calls me up and he says, "Alan, talk to me. I'm scared to death." I'm like, "You should be, because fear is what gets you up every morning at 6 and it gets you working every night till 9 so that you will achieve. Because if you do not harness that fear, trust me, your business is never going to get to where it has to be. You should be afraid of every week, where's my next paycheck coming from? How am I getting better at what I'm doing? How am I honing my industry? What am I doing to separate myself from everybody else? How am I walking in a different direction from all my competitors to make me different?"
Right.
If it's not that fear, what do you have?
Yeah, and that's the important question too, of like, the passion and the courage that it takes to make the leap is one. And then the second thing is, what is your motivation? Because your motivation is different than somebody else. And as a business owner, as an entrepreneur, you've got to know it for yourself. Like, you've got to have such a high level of self-awareness so you can arrange to get those needs met positively. Because that's the whole thing about motivational needs. They're needs. They will get met. If we don't arrange to get them met positively, they will get met negatively. And that's where counterproductive behavior comes in. But it looks different for all of us, right? And so if we're trying to fit somebody else's suit on us of using their technique for motivating or their technique for running their business in terms of managing our mindset and our motivation, it's never going to work as well as understanding what it is for us uniquely. And that's how we get our own cup filled up, so that we can then go out and motivate others to be their best selves.
I want to take her home with me.
Come on, John.
We're going to have a family meeting. I'm getting everybody together.
Right?
She's going to be our speaker.
It might get a little ugly before it gets pretty. She will tell you the good, the bad, and the ugly. It's got to get a little messy.
Right.
It's better than me yelling at him now.
Well, you know, so that's fertilizer, you know? That's what makes the plants grow.
We're talking about fertilizer today.
Yeah, I know. There is a common theme.
I just thought
theme.
I couldn't say shit on the radio.
We'll cut that one out. We can say it on the podcast, but we just can't put it on the radio, right?
Sorry. My apologies for the extra editing.
I think the term we used was poop.
Oh, yes, sure.
No, that was
different. Poop.
It was poop. We can explain that later.
It does make things grow, you know? It's getting messy. And I think that that's maybe my special brand of awesome. Like, that activity that we did together, like, it's messy. I never know. Like, I've had groups who turned on each other and it got ugly. You know, I've had other people who really had, like, some wild aha moments when they looked at their feedback. For me, like, that's the fun. Like, if it's not new, if it's not, like, at the edge, then why am I doing it? The challenge is then creating the consistency for myself, right?
So you'll go in and work with businesses and have them do, like, the exercises to help them kind of work together as a team, or then see what their own strengths are and how to, you know, better apply that stuff to their business life in general?
Absolutely. I have a couple of different specialized tools that I work with. And that was another lesson running my own business. People don't care how the sauce is made, right? They don't care what tools I'm using. Right? Yeah. So what I'm starting to embrace more and more is that people are buying the experience with me. And so creating that safe, comfortable environment for people to really look at their own stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because generally people hire me for two reasons. They either have grown to a point where they can't grow beyond it. What has worked, you know, what is the line? What's got you there won't get you here, or vice versa. And then the other reason is because whatever is happening in those behavioral patterns has started to create enough pain over and over and over again that they're willing to look at it. So some teams, it's, you know, the gossip where everybody talks about each other, but nobody talks to each other. Sometimes it's just the fact that they're a really close-knit team and they can't hold each other accountable, because that's hard when you really care about each other. So what I do is create those custom experience, like the exercises, like the one Alan's talking about. It depends on what the goals of the group are. So what I do is I kind of bring my tools. I ask them, where are you now? Where do you want to be? And I do my own assessment.
Right.
And then I create the experiences to guide them through that in a fun, comfortable, it's going to get uncomfortable, of course, because that's growth, right?
Right.
But in an environment that feels safe and that it's effective to really move them forward and change their behavior, which takes a while, right? It's more than just an event.
I think there's too many people that get caught up in trying to identify the problem without coming up with the solution.
Right,
it becomes
right,
super
everyone,
easy for someone to point a finger and say, it's your fault. But if we don't have a methodology in order to change it, and actually
solution-based
to track the changes, to to totally understand, are those changes effective?
Right. That's become more and more important to me, to realize, like, who are my ideal clients? And that's one of the things. It's one of the very first questions. How will we know if we're successful? And if it's not something we can actually track, even if it's just an eyeball measurement, right? Like just something that we can actually look back and say, yes, we've made a change and we're successful. And then I can come back a year later or 6 months later and say, are we maintaining it? Are you still moving closer to that direction? But it is important to be able to track those changes. And it is important not to get stuck in the problem and the blame and the pointing fingers.
I used to work for a staffing company years and years and years ago, and the guy, the husband of the owner, was a former CFO of a Fortune 20 company, and he didn't want to be involved in little business. He really hated little business, and the thought that he was in this little business was miserable for him. And he didn't like anybody. He told me he didn't like anybody. He told me flat out he hated everyone.
Oh, boy.
And I was so mad at him one day, I walked in with one of my buddies. I said, let's go in there. And I walked in and said, hey, Ray, let me ask you, if I ever walked in your office and I told you were an FFF, beep, 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 what would you do? Beep. And he says, I'd fire you. I said, precisely why I would never walk in your office and tell you I thought you were a FFF, beep, beep, beep. And I walked out. My friend, wow, that was so cool. You got to say that to him twice. So fairly recently, now, he's passed away. They called me and asked me to do a training session. So I went to their office, and I did a training session for them for a week, only because I wanted a helper. And everybody thinks they know everything, but they only know what they know, so they don't know what they don't know.
Right.
And I'm trying to get in there and explain to them that there's a process and a methodology in which you run a staffing firm, that every activity will create another activity so that you can continue to grow. Like a reference check call is a great way to get a job order, because you're calling somebody who's a hiring manager and you're trying to gather information.
Clever.
So there's all these really cool things that you could do. And we went through the whole process and I laid it out for them. And then a week later, I called them back and said, tell me, guys, are we doing the reference calls? No.
No.
Okay. Are we calling all the people that applied for jobs here that no longer work here or didn't get a job to see where they're interviewing so we could better? No.
We're back to baseline. Habits are sticky.
You paid me thousands of dollars to go in here and do this, and you've done nothing to implement it.
So what do you think was holding them up from making the changes that obviously, I mean, I'm not in staffing, but those sound like some cool ideas.
Dead bad habits. And we didn't break them with their bad habits. And we tried. I tried while I was there. I called a few times afterwards. Let's talk about this. Let's go through the exercises. Let's figure it out.
Right.
If you're not doing the exercises, you will never, ever get to a level of success. And that's why I'm thinking with you that if you give these people this wonderful, awesome advice,
right.
And they're not.
I need to change my branding because it's really not about what I'm teaching people and what they're learning. It's that the unlearning that's really where the money's at.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, right. They have to break their habits and then implement it.
That's what's tricky about behavior. You know, so much of what we do we're not doing it at the conscious level. It's just automatic.
You have to recognize it.
Our brains are wired that way. They're wired to anything we do repeatedly to just do it for us. It's why we can jump
and
in the car,
survival, right?
Get home and be like, I don't remember driving here. But you did it safely because we're processing so many different things without even realizing it. So it's getting in there and really helping people understand what is motivating those current bad habits. And then you can't really break a habit. You have to replace a habit. So it's like, let's go ahead and figure out what's motivating that bad behavior. Let's give you an even better carrot. Because positive reinforcement is really the only thing that's going to maintain and sustain those changes, right? A punishment.
When do you have to pull out the stick? Because at some point, you've fed so many carrots.
Accountability is so important. Yeah. And the thing is, you're right, positive reinforcement doesn't always have to be praise. And I think, man, we've come a long way in what is expected in the workplace in terms of praise and recognition. Mm-hmm. And you're right, it doesn't always have to be praise. Sometimes a carrot is like, hey, you made it this far and here's some additional feedback, right? Some of us, but again, we're all motivated differently. So for me, it's not so much about using the stick. It's about, are you using the wrong carrot? And like you're talking about with these people, it's like, well, the business owner saw the value in it, but what does it take to get buy-in from the team? And mm-hmm. that's going to look different for everybody. And that takes a lot of energy from us as business owners to figure out how we can adapt in order to really get the best out of our teams.
I was with a company that used to believe on hire on time, fire on time. And that every once in a while, you had to fire somebody for everybody else to know.
Absolutely.
You're coming next.
Yep. And that's the interesting thing when I work with people. I have one business partner who specifically, her referrals pretty much always sound like this. Okay, my recommendation is to fire this person. If you don't want to fire that person, call Loretta. Those are your options. And it's actually really fun because when I talk to them, everybody, like you were saying, everybody wants to blame. And this is what they're doing. This is.
Right.
And what I'm interested in is, well, what's the rest of the team experiencing? Because are you allowing somebody to get away with something that's detrimental to everybody
else?
What's
our contribution? Right? Like, how are we contributing to that situation, whatever's happening?
And then if we do end up, mm-hmm. and plenty of times I've been in this situation where there does end up being somebody who quits or is fired. For me, the important thing is, does everybody else know? Was it so crystal clear that everybody else actually realizes why?
Right.
Because otherwise, you just get an environment of fear, which is not sustainable.
Right.
Right? You're going to get diminishing results in productivity over time if you're using fear. But if you're using clarity and accountability, and they're like, yeah, I saw Bob. He was, we were all showing up for meetings. We were all turning our stuff in. He never did. He got fired. I'm good. It's a reinforcement for actually doing the right thing. So it's interesting, kind of the carrot and the stick, right? How you look at it.
I used to say that as a manager, if you're sitting down with an employee and you're getting ready to fire them, and they're a deer in the headlights,
if they're surprised.
Then either we didn't manage the process correctly and try and fix it, try and counsel it, try and train them, try and educate them. If we didn't do that, or we did do that, and they didn't see any of it, and they're totally delusional, we have to decide, right?
Because they should have seen it coming. They should have known I'm sitting here for a reason and know why, if they had any kind of awareness to them and were paying attention to what was...
There's certain people you could tell them 20 times, and they still didn't move the meter to make
it
any different.
Get it.
So
yeah.
If they're delusional, okay, that's one thing. But back to the point of, is the rest of the team surprised? Is the rest of the team shocked? Because then we have an even bigger problem with how we're managing our teams, right? Nobody should be surprised.
That's so important.
It is, and it doesn't mean that we're disclosing personal information or things that shouldn't be shared. It just means, are we being transparent enough in what's important? And if we're making everything important, mm-hmm. and then we eventually get to a point where we get frustrated and we're acting out of anger, that's on us. It's really... Right?
Oh, yeah.
We've given the employees the room to act out. So nothing's going to change you can hire somebody else, but eventually you're going to get
it's
the same
be
behavior.
The same thing if you're not mm-hmm. changing. I used to, the one of the places I worked at not too long ago, there was just the communication. There was no communication, and there was no team where everyone worked together. So all the things you're talking about now, it all was happening there. I did events and marketing and that kind of thing, and I would go to, after you do something like that, I would go for that constructive criticism, like, okay, now, anybody who's ever done events, you know, let's look at what we did right? And let's look at what we can improve on. Not even like what we did wrong. I mean, sure, there's those things, but
opportunities.
And I
that's
could
healthy.
Never get an answer out of him. Oh, you did a good job. Okay, I appreciate that. Thank you very much. But the only way I'm going to grow is if I get some kind of constructive feedback from you.
Right?
Couldn't get anything. I think he struggled with that own, like he just couldn't communicate that. You know, I'm like, give it to me. I can take it.
I love this story, Dawn, because it's one of the reasons why we did that exercise with Alan. Yeah, one of the goals was to see if you can have an aha moment by receiving the feedback and comparing it to how you want to be perceived. But the other goal was practice giving constructive feedback, right? It's so important. In business, it's about 50-50, right, is the ideal blend. Personal relationships, keep in mind, it's more like 70% positive feedback to constructive. So don't take that advice home with you. But it's so important, and not everybody's good at it. And people who think they're doing it, you know, when people are like, can I be brutally honest? No, absolutely not. Do you want to be clear? Do you want to be compassionately honest? Do you want to be effectively honest?
So good.
Yeah, sure. But keep your brutality to yourself. Absolutely not.
That's the first time I've heard that.
That is so good. I know I always use that brutally honest term, but
but
I think
really
I need
is.
To change that behavior.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and there's, again, it just goes back to even, you know, at the group level, how many things we just do automatically without even thinking about it, you know? And really it is, like, when we're going to give advice and feedback, we really do need to have permission. You were giving clear permission, you know, and yet your request was never recognized. Did you ever get any constructive feedback?
No.
And how frustrating was that for you?
Oh, I can't even say the words on here.
I love this because the carrot and the stick, right?
Right.
It's like it just requires us to be a little more present and tuned in.
Yeah.
Maybe he thought that he was being nice by offering constructive feedback. But in actuality, it can be really demoralizing, right? And so honoring people where they're at is not about treating people how we want to be treated. Maybe I never want constructive feedback. That's on me to ask for.
Uh-huh.
It's very different than just looking at you, seeing you, hearing you, and being like, okay, this may be uncomfortable for me. I hear where you're at, and I'm going to try to meet you there. That's our job as a leader. If you're not doing that, you may be a manager, but you're definitely not leading, Because a leader is somebody who can take people from where they're at and lead them to somewhere else.
Right.
So if you can't meet people where they're at and acknowledge and recognize that people are different from us and be able to meet them there, there's no way you're going to lead them anywhere.
Right.
You're going to be like Alan and invest thousands of dollars in training, like this business you were talking about.
Oh, they paid me. I didn't pay that.
Yeah, right. I was like Alan's friend, who brought him in, paid him thousands of dollars, valued the advice, but meanwhile, nobody applied it, right? And that's got to be frustrating for your friend. It's got to be frustrating for you.
It was frustrating for me because I really thought that they could actually make a difference.
Yeah, I'm sure it could.
They were teed up, ready to go. So it's interesting, though, and if you think about it, if you practice what you're talking about with your employees and you truly grow them, nurture them, Richard Branson had a saying was that, I support my employees. The customer's always right is not always the case. That if a customer comes in here and gives me a hard time about a valued employee, I'm going to tell that customer, bye-bye, it's time for you to go somewhere else because I value what my employees have done. And I believe that. I think there's some customers, no matter what happens, you can't make them happy.
Right, yes.
But if we've gone through this exercise that you've talked about, which is growing, nurturing, and figuring out a way to make our employees better in what they do every day with the people in the office and with our customers, it makes it a little bit easier for us as business owners to say, I'm going to stand behind my employee.
Right?
Because we've done
yes.
everything that we can. Yep.
And that's just a skill that we're not taught. How to have conflict in healthy ways is not really something that we have learned. And that's why it's just kind of cutting edge and we're seeing it at such a societal level now.
Yes.
But any business owner, anyone who's managed teams can tell you like those difficult situations where it's like, so what do I do? Do I avoid it? Do I attack someone? Do we just quit? There's a great book by one of my mentors, Nate Regeer, called Conflict Without Casualties. And he will lay out that method for how to have healthy conflict. Super cool team out of Kansas, of all places. I love the Next Element team. I license my tools from them. And he has a great, he has some other things you can listen to. Not everybody's a reader. But it's...
Wait a minute, you're saying that I'm not a reader?
No. I know, I just waved.
How did you know that?
No, are you not a reader?
Yeah, okay.
Okay, I would
It just
There's
so
a
weird
reason
how
I know
you
that,
just
Alan.
Picked that.
But I don't think that was directed towards you, Alan.
It was
a general statement.
It was a general statement, and yet some of us don't do well with books, right? Those of us who are highly engaging, we deal well with humor. If you look at the public education system, those are the students who, right, they're either getting A's or F's, right? I either like my teacher and I'm rocking this class, or I'm failing out and it's boring the bleep out of me.
Right.
And so there are particular things in our communication styles, in our interaction styles, that actually do, without realizing it, I was like, yeah, I can't see you sitting, you're an active guy. I can't see you sitting down with a book, but it's also what makes it hard, like running a business or as a teacher in a classroom, to try to be so adaptive to all these different students with their different needs, right? Some students, you can't just ask them to sit there and read a book. That's not how they learn. Right. Some parents, right, they're like, why do you have the TV on and you're listening to music and you tell me that you're studying? Guess what? They probably are learning more that way. But as a business owner, it takes a lot of energy for us to continually be able to adapt and meet our teams and our people where they're at. So there are shortcuts, right? And that's usually when people bring me in. They already value being able to adapt and be able to recognize and leverage the individual differences that we all have, that they see it as a real gift. Mm-hmm. But we need some shortcuts, like in our environment and our styles, that's going to make it easier and not drain us over and over and over again.
Loretta, I know how to find you, but how do they find you?
You know, Alan, I'm glad you asked, because that is one of my things that I have started to own as an awesome thing. People are like, it's hard to get a hold of you. It's hard to access you. Yeah, it is. There's a reason for that. I'm modeling the model. I'm getting my own needs met. The best way to connect with me is on LinkedIn. So that's probably the easiest way to access me. And just put in a little note. Put in when you try to connect, you know, secret to my success. And then I'll know that we're connecting because of the interview, and I won't have stranger danger.
Okay. because that's why you're not taking my call. Right? Stranger danger. Thanks, Loretta.
You know you're in my contact list, Alan. And I do work primarily off of referrals. And so that's why I've stopped trying to be everything to everyone and just own the fact that what I do, it's pretty unique and it's weird. Let's just be honest.
It's not weird.
It's cool weird.
Can't let you say that.
But, you know,
as a student, I could tell you it's not weird. What you've done is amazing. Honestly, seriously.
It's amazing, and it transfers everywhere. I mean, like, business and just, you know, our self-awareness of what we learn and how even, like, families, like, I love this stuff. Like, it's a theme for the day, but I really love this stuff.
Loretta, we need to have you back, though.
Okay, yeah, I'll come back.
Yes.
And, you know, by then my new website might be up, and then you can book a blind spot breakthrough. And really what I do is I tell people, bring a personal situation, bring a professional situation. I don't really care, because underneath it is the underlying pattern of behavior. And then what I guarantee is that you will walk away with at least one new technique to try.
I got the goosebumps.
So I'll come back and we'll.
We would love to have you back.
Okay,
I think you're amazing.
So it's LinkedIn, right? And we'll put it on the website, right?
Yes.
All the stuff will be posted there. Yes.
Well, I just appreciate being around really fun, cool people who are obviously just out there being themselves in the world. I think that's the best we can do for anyone, is just role model what it is to own our uniqueness.
I'm glad you're saying this now after Mike left the room.
That's fair.
Your workers' comp specialist. No money down workers' comp. pay for your coverage as you use it. Non-compliant workers' comp fines from the state of Florida start at $1,000 when you get caught. They will find you. When you have questions and need help, WGP Insurance Services will answer your call. Getting the right coverage can save you thousands of dollars a year. Call 561-953-2007.
When it comes to health coverage, you want solid value from a trustworthy company you can rely on. Florida Blue offers Medicare Advantage plans that can help you get more out of your health coverage. And don't you want more? Call Apple Insurance, your local agency for Florida Blue, at 888-MY-BLUE-8 to have all your Medicare questions answered and learn about different options. Don't settle for less than the value and stability Florida Blue has delivered throughout the state of Florida to Medicare beneficiaries for more than 25 years. Value, security, knowledge, and trust. Blue Medicare from Florida Blue means more. Call Apple Insurance at 888-MY-BLUE-8 today to speak to a licensed agent about your Medicare Advantage options. That's 888-MY-BLUE-8. Apple Insurance and Florida Blue. Call 888-MY-BLUE-8 today.
Florida Blue is an independent license of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association.
Good morning. This is Alan Bornstein with Secret to My Success, here with Luis Salicea, former Major League Baseball player, and he has a very special guest for us today who's going to talk about his transitioning from being one of the best closers in the game to being a all-star business owner. Luis, tell us about your guest.
So, Tom Flash Gordon, we're so happy to have you. I know you have a lot of things to talk about, especially with business, but before we get to that, I would like to ask you a baseball question. It has nothing to do with typically you pitching and anything, but we've seen a surge of this pitchers throwing 100 miles an hour. The game is evolved towards power, power, power. And I knew you had a pretty good fastball for a very long time with a devastating curveball. Could you please tell me your thoughts on that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, Louie, in the beginning, I thought, you know, with you and I, we've always known each other for a mighty, mighty long time. I think it's 89. And you've always told me that I had a very good fastball. Now you're saying it's pretty good. So I tell you, man, I'm being around you, man. I tell you that you hit that one pretty fast, especially after you beat me around pretty good. You hit me pretty good. But no, anyways, I think what we're seeing is a lot of data that's out there. We're seeing a lot of stuff that's on some of these web pages and websites. You know, we're seeing the scouting at Perfect Game and some of the elite players and programs that we're seeing actually getting so much baseball in to where there's been a trend and an upside trend of stronger, faster, bigger, smarter players in regards. And I think that's where sometimes we're seeing these arms with the power that these kids possess at the ages of 10 all the way up to, you know, 24, 25 guys in some ways still picking up somewhere between 3 miles an hour to four or five miles an hour every 4 to 6 months. And it's just been an uphill trend. So I think that's a lot to do with the data that's out there. Not so much that everything that works on the internet would actually be able to translate into the mechanics as well as the throwing and the strength that you get in the fastball and the velocities, even the spin rate. However, this is that time and era where we're seeing these kids with these big arms. And however, also too, there's a downside to that. And that downside to that is there, once they reach their peak, sometimes there's no place else to go. Until we knew, getting in professional baseball, we were throwing so much more. We were playing catch with, you know, big major league pitching coaches that had an idea of how to help us still to develop our pitches as well as our mechanic and clean things up. So kudos to the things that we see. But at the same time, it could be come back later on down the line and haunt us. We're seeing that uphill trend of arms and strong arms and at kids at the age of at the age of 14 throwing somewhere between 87 and 92, 93 miles an hour. And then you upwards of the age of 16 all the way up to 21, they're throwing somewhere around 100 miles an hour. Like I said, it's what the scouts are out there looking for. It's what organizations are looking for. And I think, like I said, that is the trend. However, there will possibly at some point, possibly, may even be a downside to that. But right now, that's what's going on. Kids are stronger, faster. And for me, as I look at kids, I always say arm strength, arm speed, arm action. And then I developed the mechanics. Never teach one kid the same as I do all the kids I'm around. And however, I think you maximize the kid's potential when you give them the best chance to be the athlete that you watch.
Yeah, yeah. We spent some time this past weekend up in Atlanta, Georgia with some 11U, and there was a couple kids throwing in low 80s and all of them. And these kids are 11 years old, and they're throwing in the mid-70s. But going back to what we're really here for, I'm going to pass you on to Alan Bornstein. Basically, where do you see yourself in, as a business person? What do you think this baseball life, you know, after you retire and you say, you know what, I'm going to become a business guy. What can you walk me through that?
Yeah. Well, I think the first thing that ever happened to me in regards to thinking about business is that the great thing is that I did become a baseball player. And I played a game, of course, that was very fulfilling when it comes to, you know, if you played well or how well you played, of course, your enhancement of making much more money was gotten that much better and bigger. And so I translated some of that and what I was thinking about into owning dealerships. I was blessed enough to have two brothers that was playing professional baseball. And, of course, one was borderline about to make the major league. The other one was having arm issues, so he wanted to retire in regards to that. But and they became my partners, and they became my eyes and my ears in regards to whether or not that business or whatever business I got into, they would help me. They finished college and went on to school. So, basically, I always had a mix of guys that was close to me that could help me translate some of this baseball, finance, some of the money that I was making, and put it into some sort of a business. First and foremost, I did want to believe that, you know, for what I saved and I kept in regards to wanting to save for retirement was going to be the first thing. But I also had to separate, too, whether or not I wanted to take some chances and put my money into a business. And in that business, I'm actually not there every day. But in some regards, I had guys that I can actually count on, which was both of my brothers that retired from minor league baseball. So we went on to Ford. We actually... knew a family that was very, very high on the list of people with great character, people that Ford and the company would support and back, and they were, of course, from my little hometown. At the age of 15, they gave me my first ever job, and Mr. Jarrett Ford, Bill Jarrett, was one of the main people in that area would always inspire me that you can be, you can make it, you can be good in the game, but you can also someday become one of my partners. And that's how that got started. Of course, in the automotive industry, there's a list of guys that wants to be approved to have a dealership back in that time, back in the 70s, 80s, 60s, 70s, 80s, maybe the 90s, early 90s. Guys were on the list trying to make themselves a viable resource for any automotive company to want. And that list was long. So, however, I had people that I knew in regards to that and the character that they represented that I'd love to be partners with. So if you had that, you can get in. And then if you did have to wait for that company to make a decision, a lot of it was based on what they thought of you as a person, what they thought of you financially, how well you've done with your money and your resources and your time. And so I kind of equated that to this.
Flash, I got to ask you a question. It sounds like a mentor was super important to you and that you had a lot of guidance. But I'd like to know more about your challenges. What was your biggest challenge for you personally when you actually transitioned from baseball to being in this business? What obstacles did you find that kind of kept you up at night?
Well, just knowing that, hey, my finances is going into something that I wasn't totally sure of. Mm-hmm. However, like you said, I did have a mentor, but that mentor already understood the automotive industry. And he was very, very, very lucrative into it, whether it be him owning the Ford dealership right out or him having that seat on the Ford bench for his, you know, people of knowledge and information. So right there, I knew that I was in the right place. And for me, I wanted to totally be able to give my community as well as my family other outlets to have. So I got into the Ford business. I got into selling cars, something that I did like doing. I really wanted to be now have that knowledge about. And so it made it easy for me to transition into that. And I took that chance with the cash, the money that I had up front, the money that I saved, believing that this dealerships and these dealerships that I own right now, I'm majority owning three, and a part owner in five. So
wow,
it's That to me, I had people that were there for me. I also had to also go and research some of this information to figure out how do I know and start to relate to what this business would be. Baseball, I was just playing. I love still, but at the same time, now I'm transitioning into that business guy. So I'd come home, shucks, and I'd come home every year and go to the business, sit down in my office, watch, learn, listen, figure out how these contracts was actually designed. How many cars can we bring in a month as well as sale? Is the business more lucrative for used cars than it is on new cars? It sure is. So I had to learn all these things as well as still compete on the baseball field. So wow. I became more of a businessman when I would come home. I would learn for the last 12 to 15 years about the business.
You were committed
how
into it.
Do contracts, yes, in regards to fleet negotiations. That was a big thing. You know, want to understand that. Why? Because your fleet divisions is always something dealing with other communities. When cars one-on-one are not selling, usually you'll sell the fleets. So I needed to know all these things. And of course, I spent that time for the last, I'd say the last 10 to 15 years, I've been really serious about it. But I also still take out time to get away from it. But I can explain it. I can explain it because I see how the contracts relate. I also understand at the end of the year, by November, is what we would call the final day of that season. Usually is December 31st, but for us in the industry, it's like November 1st. We want to tally up everything that we've understood, made, and how do we make the season better going into the next year.
Yeah, the deadlines.
So, yes, I was always involved in all those contract negotiations, all those decision-making, the process of how we make sure that we understand, develop, use contracts, use government funding, stuff that
you got to use everything.
People don't want to know anything about sometimes. That's what's made my business that much more successful. Number one.
The devil's in the details.
Well, and that usually happens a lot. However, at the same time, you know, I was fortunate enough to have someone there every day. But now I'm actually on hand probably more like 2-3 weeks a month to see what's the transitioning period, what's happening, and how do we make this better.
And it seems like it's working for you.
Flash, yes. How many people do you actually have relying on you for their weekly paycheck?
We have about, my dealership, probably about 60 people, 62 to 65 employees. And thank God we have not had to lay any of them off.
That's nice. A big responsibility.
It is. It really is. And it's. I think it was already bred there that I wanted to be a part of the community as well as show them how much I support and love them. But also, too, you know, still playing the game of baseball, my extended family taught me so much about business. And in regards to coming back home, I was always looking to find ways to make sure that we improved. That year we had the recession in regards, I usually don't like to use those words because sometimes some words are just totally destroy you. But that's what it was. That recession between all 7 dealerships, we lost about 45 employees. And that was a lot. I mean, because that's a community really.
Was that because of COVID?
No, that was the year of the recession when Obama was in office.
2009.
We got to the pandemic. Thank God we have not had to lay anyone off.
Wow.
We have done well enough that we could sustain our capital and we could sustain our inventory.
And that's a big achievement. Not a lot of companies can say that about their organizations. A lot of different companies have had to lay off their people, so I get it.
Oh, absolutely. And the first thing we have to actually, my brothers and I do, is every day we pray at 12 o'clock.
Flash.
For those people listening out there, I wanted to mention Flash's 2 sons are also active major league players. So I don't know if people need to know that. I mean, it's, you know, raising kids is tough, but I mean, making 2 of, you know, your sons major league players is another accomplishment. And also, Flash, let us know, talk to us about NASCAR. I know you're heavily involved in that.
Yeah. I mean, it's always something that I've felt like as a kid I wanted to be involved in. However, I didn't know the ins and outs of it probably the last, like I said, 15 years, 17 years where I've been really at home doing more with my dealership. I've been that much more so also trying to find ways to be involved with racing. And it's given me an opportunity to be a part of a few teams. Of course, for me, I didn't look at it as I was going to make anything from that. That investment was not really an investment. It was something that you're doing for the love of it. So I got into NASCAR to actually have people, radio personalities like yourselves, some of the top investors in the world come into Daytona or come into Sebring, and they see this race, but they come to my RVs and my suite and sit with me, and we talk business. So we figure out where can we go next to best make a company bigger, stronger, faster, and how do we utilize some of the money and the funding and the support that the government uses and gives us to basically translate some of this into this huge business. So there's a bunch of people involved. However, I'm the one. I sometimes get the opportunity and the more of the praise sometimes, and I don't think I deserve it all. I'm not sure I don't. But I'm usually the one that sets up all of that where guys come in, like yourself, Louis, some of these professionals, some of these actresses and lawyers and doctors, and they'll come in, and then now we all network to figure out how do we improve our own business, number one, how do we improve ourselves as a business owner, number two, and number three, how do we keep the community viable? There's three very, very small things that we say. There still are a lot, but those are the things we actually focus on. And by the time we leave a race, in 3 or 4 days, maybe 7 days, 10 days, whatever, it's usually something that we know moving forward. Someone that has a Chevrolet dealership may be having something huge start to happen for him right now, because what's happening is he's come to this meeting, he's met these huge Chevrolet owners and Ford owners or in dealership owners to where this is the next location being worked out.
Tom?
So it just gives us a leg up. It gives us a leg up. So I stay with that, doing it, and that's something that I just got into as a hobby. Like I said, I'll invest in it. There's no money for me being made on it. The biggest thing for me being is the notoriety, and my logos are everywhere on some of these haulers and some of these teams and some of these shirts and things that I go out to the track and see, and I bring some of these top gurus that are the financial gurus of the world in for dinner, meet some of the drivers, shake hands, and say hello to professionals like me, Luis, and some of the top guys that I played with.
Flash, I hate to do this, but we're running out of time. I want to thank you so much for your time, your stories, your information, motivation, all the things that you've given to us. The one thing I would like to tell you is I will be up there. I want to order a Mach-E. I want it red. I want rear-wheel drive, and I'm going to buy one from you, okay?
I will keep you on that. I will hold you to it. Just know that here, you'll be happy. And that's how we live.
I'm going to make it happen. My son works for Ford, so I get the A discount. You might not want to hear that, but anyway.
We'll be grateful to have you guys there. And also, I think the extension of what you all are doing is very viable, and it's important. So continue what you're doing, because I've always believed that giving information to people, I learned that from some of the best people in the game and some of the best people in Ford and some of the Ford families, that give information and it'll help people have options.
Thank you so much.
Flash, we are so happy you were with us. Thank you so much. We're looking forward to coming up to the dealership and picking out my new car.
Well, man, give me a call when you guys get ready. And thanks for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
Flash, I appreciate it, man. Thank you, as always.
Thanks for listening to The Secret to My Success on Legends 100.3. Tune in next week for more from Alan, George, Lewis, and their spectacular guests. Find the secret to your success. WGP Insurance Services. Most people don't know. When your workers' comp coverage is canceled or lapses, your insurance carrier notifies the state of Florida you have no coverage. They make it really easy for the state to find you. The state will find you, too. Please make sure you are covered. Fines start at $1,000. They have the right to order you to show your bank statements and all related documents. It is cheaper and easier to get the most affordable coverage with no money down. WGP Insurance Services offers competitive rates, and now they've got you covered from roof to car to house to road. WGP Insurance Services. Call 561-953-2007.
When it comes to health coverage, you want solid value from a trustworthy company you can rely on. Florida Blue offers Medicare Advantage plans that can help you get more out of your health coverage. And don't you want more? Call Apple Insurance, your local agency for Florida Blue, at 888-MY-BLUE-8 to have all your Medicare questions answered and learn about different options. Don't settle for less than the value and stability Florida Blue has delivered throughout the state of Florida to Medicare beneficiaries for more than 25 years. Value, security, knowledge, and trust. Blue Medicare from Florida Blue means more.
Call Apple Insurance at 888-MY-BLUE-8 today to speak to a licensed agent about your Medicare Advantage options. That's 888-MY-BLUE-8. Apple Insurance and Florida Blue. Call 888-MY-BLUE-8 today.
Florida Blue is an independent license of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association.